Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Liz went on Amazon and got a digital copy because I needed someone in the family to put eyes on it.
Right.
But I got all the confirmation I needed that it's an okay story for us based on the fact that I've had a couple messages from Colin St. Maxons, who likes the photos.
Right. Photos are good, but apparently you appear to be 6'8" in the
which
photos.
Which is the best part about this.
You had a tower over me.
You had a friend who's a basketball player
yeah.
who wrote to you and goes, well, how tall is my
Kenny Marcus.
6'4"? 6'5"?
Yeah.
6'5"?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm 6'1½", and I'm clinging to that number, trying to get
I've
to
shrunk
6'2".
To 5'8". I'm down to 5'8 at this point.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So we have two birthdays that we need to get to. Two birthdays. Let me just say, first of all, yesterday is Wednesday. I will explain why we had no podcast on Monday. We will do today, Wednesday. We will do Friday as well. Michael is here. He is 6 feet away on Uncle Benny's table. Nigel is where he should be. Sean is where he should be. And we will reach out today to Wilbon and to Richard Justice. The birthdays. The one of lesser consequence is Cindy Bourne is 67 years old. The one of far greater consequence is the baby boy Bootsy. Today.
The Bootster.
Today is 3 years old. So what is planned as a result of this?
Well, what is planned?
He's cognizant of being a birthday boy.
Yes, but it's still more of a like a hypothetical because we're still in the Berenstain Bears phase. So Berenstain Bears too much birthday. So he's very worried that he's not going to get a party with all the trimmings. We're just doing it low-key. We're going to have another barbecue at the house. You were invited to just come over and have burgers, but you said you don't want to come over.
No, I'd love to come over, but I can't stay long.
Okay, well, yeah, first thing you say whenever you walk into a house,
you'll come over,
and Kate is still in town.
Right.
We have a great tradition now where we scoot around the neighborhood.
But the big development,
now that he's 3 years old, we got to get the kid in shorts. He refuses to wear shorts.
But you've explained this because he fell down off the scooter and scraped his knees.
It's more like he's doing this low ride, just hang out as he scoots up and down the streets. He's leaning back. He's falling over every half block. And part of it's because we're going after dinner and the kid's half in the bag and doesn't realize what's going on.
Right.
But no, he has, I don't know how a 3-year-old can accumulate so many presents. And part of it's we've just been in quarantine. So he's sitting there.
I was going to throw him a $5 bill.
Well, I was sort of hoping it would be a 5 followed by a 0.
No, it's just a 5. He's a kid. So I mean, what store is he going into?
He knows the process of Amazon, and he sees a book he wants at the end of the story because it shows you other books in the series, and he goes,
he wants you to read every,
what's this title? What's this one called? And he goes, order Amazon. Look at your phone, Mom. Look at your phone.
See, we're not.
And every time the doorbell rings or he sees anybody coming up the steps, he goes, package for me? So the entire last 2 weeks, we're running downstairs trying to hide packages in the basement.
So I would like him to be the last person in the United States of America using cash. So I'm going to give him a $5 bill.
He has a piggy bank.
Yeah. Well, coins.
That thing is filled with 50s.
With 50s?
Yeah, I do.
Who's giving him 50s?
Well, the 50s you give me, I pass down to the next generation.
Oh, well, okay. But I give them to you for buying food and stuff like that. I'm giving the kid a 5, which is 4 more than any of my grandmothers gave me. So, you know.
You'd be very happy that yesterday we celebrated the early birthday. We took him to the putting green,
yeah.
where he just runs around and goes to the tree beds, which is the most manicured little playground space when playgrounds are just now opening. And he brings out his little toy trucks. And then what's so great about kids is I got a great practice session. I hit wedges for 15 minutes, putted for 15 minutes. We're about ready to go pick a pizza. And like, no, he goes, can I putt now? I'm ready to putt.
So how did he do?
He has a tendency to just want to pick up every ball that I'm putting, and then he throws it across the green.
Okay, well, that's...
And then what's so great, little mama's boy, he makes like a 2-foot putt. Come on, it's a gimme.
Yeah.
And then he runs over, he goes, mama, look.
Oh, that's good. That's very nice. So happy birthday to the baby boy, Bootsy.
Michael, a lot of people wonder, will you actually have a pony ride for young Bootsy today?
He's too small. His kid's got to be about 6 feet tall.
But he's got height.
Yeah, but it's height for a 3-year-old.
But he looks like a 5-year-old.
Okay, but he's too small for a pony.
For those asking, the pony ride photo is in a place of prominence in our living room. It's family photos from weddings, graduations, births, and then there's this awkward picture of Michael on a pony.
With his legs touching the ground.
Dragging.
All right, let me explain why I was not here on Monday. I had surgery. That was the procedure that I had. I had a type of skin cancer that required surgery, and I went to something called, and it's, you know, a little scary when something is called the Skin Cancer Surgery Center. You know, it's very specific, but
at least you know what they do.
Yeah, it's very specific, but it's not a pleasant thing. And I was, the procedure was done by Dr. Andy Montemorano, who was great. He was recommended by my dermatologist and then recommended to me by someone else from another part of the medical profession who checked him out and said how good he was. He's young. Everybody is young to me. I'm about to have yet another birthday, and everybody is young to me. But he, every time I wrote him or talked to him, he was reassuring. I would tell him how apprehensive I was, and he would say, that's perfectly normal, but please understand that there's nothing I'm going to find in you that I haven't dealt with many, many times before, and you're going to be all right. We're going to get this done. It was a thing called Mohs surgery, M-O-H-S. It's microscopic surgery, and they take out what they think is bad, and then they check the margins, and they come back. This is the oddest thing, is as, and what hurts the most physically is the introduction of anesthesia into your body. I mean, those are stinging little shots. Those are a number of shots, as everybody knows who's gone through anything like this. And then it does numb the area. So then they can basically excavate your whole head, and you're not going to feel it in that particular moment. So those shots went on, and then they scrape away some stuff. And then what they do, the technique is, and I hope I have this correct, they take the cells and put them under a microscope, the tissue from your body, and then they decide whether or not they have to get any more. And in my case, I was extraordinarily fortunate that he got what he was supposed to get the first time in and then came in and stitched me up. But you sit and you wait for a while. Like, you know, most people wait in the waiting room. I was not going to wait in the waiting room. I just lay down in the operating area and just said, I'll just wait here. And your mind runs to very, very weird things when something like that happens. You know, you just don't know what's going on. I, of course,
state capitals.
I did a lot of state capitals in alphabetical order. I named and renamed the Rascals, and then I changed their names around as if Dino Danelli was Dino Brigati and Eddie Brigati was Eddie Cornish. I mean, I just played with that for a while and didn't tell anybody what I was doing. And I was left alone in there, and, you know, it's always dangerous to leave someone alone, but I was stitched up. I'm on the mend. Everything that, Andy said would happen so far.
What was the process like?
I'm using Tylenol.
What was the process? Only one at a time. You always take half the dosage.
One at a time. Yes.
What was the process like for outpatient surgery? Just given what it's like to go into any medical center.
Take your temperature, make sure you have a mask. Everyone in there has a mask. Distancing in terms of the waiting room. While I was there, and I was early, there were only three people in a very large waiting room, though I couldn't wait to get away from them, although I don't really know why, because then I was walking into someone else. There were two people who dealt with me physically, and, you know, and they do the best they can to reassure you that everything is fine, but if your imagination runs wild, it runs wild. I've got stitches for 2 weeks. They're not dissolvable stitches. I will do PTI starting tomorrow, and I'll wear a hat. You know, I'll wear a hat so you don't have to view this stuff on my head. But that's what happened. I wanted to tell. Most people knew. I didn't describe it in detail because you don't do that until it's over. At least I don't do that until it's over. So everything appears to be fine, for which I'm very grateful. And very, very good surgeon, Andy Montemorano, if you need anything like that. So, of course, if you're in Boise or if you're in Tacoma or if you're in, you know, Lake Worth, Florida, you're unlikely to come up here to do it. But I'm happy, and he answers my questions. He says, you get one a day. And I say, well,
he must not know you very well.
And I said, well, because I'd written him a text in which I said, I actually pity you because of the amount of time that I'm going to take. And he goes, no, you get one a day. And I said, is it a use it or lose it situation? Can I wait a day and get two the next day?
Like rollover minutes?
Rollover minutes. I'd like to have that. So anyway, I wanted to get to one other thing in the open, and this made me extraordinarily angry. And so I'm gonna tell everybody about it. You may know, I think I may have discussed this a number of times on the show, that my old boss, George Solomon, who had taken over something called the Povich Center, of the Merrill something or other at the journalism school at the University of Maryland, was retiring. And there was supposed to be a big party for him, but because of the coronavirus, everything now is virtual. So instead of there being a dinner for George Solomon, there was a virtual celebration of his career. And if I understand virtual correctly, by this definition, you could log into this event and you could watch it for as long as you wanted to. I don't know that you could participate in it. There was an event planned. And Wilbon and I were asked if we could, along the nature of a roast, if we could make some comments about George. And I said, sure, because I do these things. I write these scripts, and Mike and I record these scripts. But at the period of time when we were supposed to record the script, that was in March, mid-March, and Mike had already left for Arizona just for a weekend or a week and never came back. So it was very hard to record this thing. And they kept asking us, they repeatedly asked us at the University of Maryland, could you do it? Could you do it? And I say that we went through hoops to do it. We needed, you know, Matt Kelleher and Eric Rideholm to set it up so that we could do it on Zoom, because we couldn't do it in proximity. And I don't have a teleprompter where I am, and I would be seen reading this, which isn't as effective as talking about it, you know, and just having a natural flow. But we were able to do it, and we were able to get it in the first week of June. And this particular event was June 18th. And then when the event took place, I did not watch the event, but I was sent a note by one of the two women who had been in contact with us for some long period of time. And again, let me say that we were not given any particular instructions. We were not given a time limit. We were told, do something for us. So we went into it thinking, okay, we'll do it. And like with everybody else, you'll run it. That seemed to be the bargain that had been made, since we weren't told anything else. So we get a note the day after the event, which says, we edited what you did. And we put it together in a big package, and you can view it. So I viewed it. I wanted to view it. And it was a very nice package, narrated, for example, by Bob Lee of ESPN. Who was in it? Seth Davis was in it, and Scott Van Pelt was in it, and Christine Brennan was in it, and Rachel Nichols Alexander was in it. You know, and we were in it, and we were edited down. About 75% of what we did was left on the cutting room floor. This infuriated me. And I wrote a note, and I said, you asked us to do this repeatedly, and we went through hoops to do this, and you didn't tell us you were editing it? You need to tell us you were editing it. You needed to inform us you were editing it. In the end, I said, really? You didn't even tell us? You didn't have the courtesy to tell us? And I got a note back and said, well, sorry, but, you know, it was really good, and George was really happy that you were in it. And I wrote back, and I said, No, you needed to tell us, and I did this after consulting with editors, of course, because I wanted to find out if I was right. I said, you needed to tell us. You needed at the least to show us what you had done and ask our permission if you could use it. We would say yes, or we would say no. And that's the way it works. And if you're teaching journalism, that's the way it works. So that was my position. My position was that you had to tell us. What do you think, Michael?
I think you're 100% correct in the journalism context, and they should have told you, but I think you've learned a lesson.
Never do this again. Never.
But you have to be careful as to what you do with any video that you give out, because you could make any of your clips that's, you know, normally they don't give you any instructions because they like the idea of take this where you guys want to go. And even if it's a little bit mean, even if it cuts a little too close to
the edge, totally mean. Nothing mean was shown.
And
the mean stuff was the good stuff.
In its totality, that's where the warmth is, and that's why it works. But you now realize anyone can take that little clip, and this is why it's so dangerous to put any clip out on social media, because any photo, any small little video, someone can take, cut it down to suit their own purposes. Here, the end product is fine. I agree.
They
should just send a disclaimer saying, we'd love for you to send a video. Here are some basic parameters, and just so you know, depending on how the event works,
we are going to
cut something
down. Yes, that's all you have to do. So it begins I mean, the way I do these things is I play the bad guy and Mike plays the good guy. Mike, you know, I say something nasty and Mike says, oh, stop. You know, you love this guy.
Good cop, bad cop?
Yes. And then we move on. So in this particular one, I started, I said, you know, George is, we're here to celebrate George Solomon's 90th birthday. And Wilbon says, no, we're not. And he's not 90, he's 80. And I said, 80? I said, God, he looks bad for 90. He looks really bad for 80. And that's how it begins. Well, that's not in there. I mean, none of the good stuff is, it's not even in there. We just sort of cut into it. And you could say, gee, Tony, you're overreacting. And I won't even argue that I'm overreacting. But you owe us that.
Right, but that's
where... You asked us to do a specific thing, and we did it. And if you were going to edit it, you owe us that. So, and I've done many of those forums. Why have I done them? Because I love George Solomon, and I love Maury Povich, and it's named for Shirley Povich. And I've gone there a number... I'm never going again. Well, they wouldn't have me anyway, because I'm too old. But I'm not doing this again. I'm just not... You know, I mean, George is out of there, and I'll explain it to Maury, who I would do anything for. But I just think they have to tell you it is our plan to cut this into a unified, organic, okay, but just tell me. Don't show it to me, and I go, well, what happened to the rest of us? What happened? And I talked to editors who told me I was right on this.
Again, but that's why this is a very interesting case study, because you're seeing this through the eyes of a journalist and they're seeing this through the eyes of essentially promoters,
yeah,
or people who are preparing a gala celebration.
I'm not naming them. I could.
Where everything is sort of rough cut. But for this school of journalism, that's where you have to have some better systems in place. And again, it can just be a small disclaimer and just say, we are happy to show you final proof, which is something that, again, you know, an editor would do. Want to make sure you have eyes on this to make sure
an editor goes over
what you said.
You hand something in, an editor goes over it with you as to what is coming out and why it's coming out. That is the process. I understand that. Just tell us. Don't after the fact say, and by the way, we edited it down. Don't. I mean, tell us at the beginning. We'll do it. We'll be happy
right,
to do
but then
it.
You could also, if you know that's the case, you don't have to try and maintain a 90-second straight through.
Well, I didn't know it was the case, because in most cases,
that's what you want.
They run what ask you repeatedly. You figure they're going to run it.
You could give 3 or 4 vignettes. It's a lot easier on you just because you know, oh, I trust that on the back end, right, you're going to edit this down and make me look good.
So now I'm angry at that. I'm never going to do anything for them again. I could
name
the
people.
The
result. You got the result you wanted.
What's that?
To something never have to do about anything again.
Yeah, sure. So take a break.
Oh, you're looking for your out read.
I'm looking for my outs, my reads. I don't have any reads.
He doesn't have his reads.
Hold
you're
on.
Tony Kornheiser.
Hold on. Somebody talk for a while I get this stuff.
Well, I think the only thing you can do with these people, Tony, is to find out where they live, purchase their houses, and tell them they have 15 minutes
to
move out.
Get out in 10 minutes. All right. Michael, did I leave the reeds anywhere?
Maybe you should take that second Tylenol.
All right, we'll just get out. We will have Michael Wilbon when we return. I'll double up on the reeds somewhere down the road, and I'll try to make good, right? Is that all right, Nigel?
Yeah, that should work.
Because I don't know where they are. All right, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, I found them. They were underneath a bunch of stuff. This is the Brooklinen ad. And it says that I should make this conversational and make them my own. Talk about when small changes turned into lifestyle changes. Examples included, but not limited to, meatless Monday turned into vegetarianism. No, subbing soda with water once a day to cutting out soda completely. If you want to do that in your life, go ahead, knock yourself out. This is a Brooklinen ad. I'm not going to talk about soda, and I'm not going to talk about Meatless Monday. I'm going to talk about the fact that I have bought Brooklinen sheets. I have bought a Brooklinen comforter. I have bought Brooklinen towels. I've spent my own money to do this, and I like the product. I don't do this with all products. I don't spend my own money with all products, but I've done it here. And says, talk about what you love most about Brooklinen products. Examples include, but not limited to, luxury products at a low price, motivated, encouraged, more positive life changes. No, they help me sleep. You know, and if I take a shower, they get me dry. I mean, it's don't overthink it, kids. Don't make it into something it isn't. I bought a comforter to sleep, and I sleep well under the comforter. Maybe you can do the same thing. The company was founded in early 2014 by the husband and wife duo. I love when they say duo. Love that. Rich and Vicky Fulop. They wanted to find a beautiful home essentials that did not cost an arm and a leg. And today they're on a mission to make you comfortable. I quibble with the word mission. I always think of Digger Phelps with mission.
We're a mission-driven show.
Yeah, we are?
Oh, yeah.
You think so? They've moved beyond the bedroom to offer bathroom and life essentials, towels which are super plush and ultra-light. Hammam. What does hammam mean? H-A-M-M-A-M. Somebody look that up. Hammam. They have shower curtains and bath mats and robes. I didn't know that. They have silk eye masks. Wow, you could get a face mask and an eye mask, and then you couldn't see or hear or talk. Robes, furniture, art, and totes. The final little details that make up your big upgrade. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to start making small changes that make big differences. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. So go on and make yourself comfortable. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use the promo code TonyKShow. Use the code, people. TonyKShow, only at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I love sleeping in the dog bed.
This is our old friend Susan
Peek, the Casper mattress dog bed.
The official children's musician There's of the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's no room in the dog bed for anyone else but me.
Chessie sleeps in the dog bed.
My grandpa's dog is named Chessie. When he gets a rabbit, it's messy.
Yes, it is.
And he tries to get me to the dog bed when it's time to go to sleep.
So she sleeps in a variety of places, including the tile floor in the bathroom and on the bed. But she sleeps at least twice in the mattress, in the Casper mattress, which makes me very happy. Susan Peek will come back later in the show. She plays in Richard Justice at the moment and of MLB.com. And we apparently have baseball. So the obvious question is, where are we now, in your opinion?
What I think is going to happen, and I don't know how you feel about it, I think we're going to get back on the field on July 3rd, depending on the coronavirus, and at some point it's going to feel normal again. We're all mad at the owners. We're mad at the players. You guys could have been back on the field on the 4th of July. You missed an opportunity. All those things, and all those things are true. But at some point, we are going to be so happy to see something, to have something normal to watch on TV, that I think people are going to rush back and crave it again. That's my opinion. Again, the backdrop, this fight they had is very complicated. It has tentacles going back 20 years, and people don't like it. And especially in a year like this, it was distasteful. But at the end of the day, I think we're going to be back on the field if the virus lets us. And in fact, in Texas, we may have fans in the stands. The governor here, who's not the brightest bulb in the drawer, has said, you know, the virus is over. Even now, as he's pleading people, don't go outside and please wear a mask because the numbers are out of control here. But the Rangers and Astros are going to have the option to put some people in the stands, and the Rangers at least are surveying their season ticket holders, asking them, would you be comfortable coming? But for the most part, we're going to have a sport that's going to look unlike it's ever looked before, with nobody in the stands in most places, but they are going to be playing.
So let me get to the nuts and bolts of it. This is, to my knowledge, Rob Manfred has the right to impose a season. The players have said, just tell us where to report and when to report. But the question that I have, because you see this in other sports, you've already seen it in the WNBA and the NBA, where some people have opted out. Do you think that players, particularly big star players, who don't need this money and are not going to get paid anywhere near what they would on a normal season, do you think any of them will say, I'm just not going to play?
Will they feel safe? They all want to play. Like, I know guys like Gerrit Cole. He's craving to get back and play. But he also has a pregnant wife. And will he feel safe going back home at the end of the day? Because these guys are not going to be isolated in a way. NBA
right.
players
no bubble.
Are going to be isolated. So my sense is that every player is going to play. But there is always that option. And that's been, you know, like you had me on at the start, or at the scheduled start of the season, I said, this is not going to be about money. Well, I turned out to be wrong. It's going to be about making the players feel safe. And now that's the challenge. Can you put the players, or really any of us, you know, like you probably don't go to restaurants, right?
No, I'm not going to. I'm not.
No, that's not. Like, yes. And that is the challenge. You know, the players have asked, can you test us every day just so we can be sure? What are we going to do when a player tests positive? Like what happened to the Phillies? The Phillies apparently had one social occasion after a workout.
And eight people.
And that's the risk we're going to have. We kind of, baseball sort of looked at South Korea as a model, but those teams travel very little, and they have a rule that when one player tests positive, we're going to shut it down for a couple of weeks. You can't do that. You're going to have to figure out how to deal with it, and that's the challenge. But that's the challenge everyone around the world is facing right now.
People are very happy. You're very happy that there's going to be baseball. But there will be not a debate. There will be discussion about the antagonism between the owners and the players.
Right.
Has anybody won here? Has either side gotten an advantage here as far as you're concerned, owners or players? And is there a gathering gloom for what happens next when there is lawsuit after lawsuit, I guess, from players to owners?
Well, I don't understand the players turning down the last offer. The last offer was for expanded playoff.
Was better.
Playoff money. It was salary forgiveness. But the owners, the players said, hey, we have this lottery ticket here that might win. We want to be able to file a grievance.
Right.
And even though it's going to take years, it could be worth it. I don't understand it. And Trevor Bauer, whatever you think of the Reds pitcher, was on Twitter saying, hey, wait a minute. These are fights we should be having in 16 months. We have to think bigger picture now. The union felt it got rolled in the last negotiations. The players are very upset the way free agency is turning out now, that teams are not going to pay older players. The compensation system has to be changed to give players money in the first half of the group. Those are all legit, and those are all things that are going to come up after the 2021 season when there's a new basic agreement. Why you decide to show the owners you could say no now? And they hired a new a labor lawyer, a guy named Bruce Meyer from the NBA. And basically, and you hear that Scott Boras had a big influence, and they just said, we're going to say no, and we're going to say no to everything. We're going to show the players are united. I'm just not sure this was the time to say no. The owners made it clear, we're going to lose our shirts this year. And where there's only so much money, we're going to lose. And they just got into a standoff. Now, what you always hear is from fans, and I've heard this, you know, I've been doing these labor things for 25 years, is I'm not coming back. I'm done with these guys. I'm never going to watch another game. And then that's the person that's writing you in the, in the middle of September is saying, the way Dave Roberts is using his bullpen is killing me. And by the way, I'm not watching.
Yeah. So you mentioned, and I appreciate this, you mentioned Scott Boras. Many years ago, when Marvin Miller was running things, there was, in my mind, a need for the players to be organized. They were really being taken advantage of. And Marvin Miller was brilliant and should never have had to wait till after his death to be in the Hall of Fame. Marvin Miller, there was a need for Marvin Miller. Is there a similar need for Scott Boras, who seems to be all about money?
He is that. Once I said to him about a free agent, might have been Pudge Rodriguez, but the guy wants to live in South Florida. I mean, is money the only factor? And he goes, you've been a little slow to catch on, haven't you? Exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. The players, look, the compensation system has to be changed. Teams have figured out that your peak production year is age 27. The way the system works now, you only start getting the big money when you're 28 or 29. As Farhan Zaidi, the general manager of the Giants, said, the president of baseball operations of the Giants said, for the first 25 years of free agency, we paid players based on what they had done. Now we're going to pay them free agents based on what we think they're going to do. And if you're 28, 29, 30, you're not going to get that 10-year contract anymore because those things have proven not to be good. So what does that mean? You know, and I've asked Bruce Meyer this. I said, are you throwing things at the owners, like quadruple the minimum salary, start the free agent clock on the day they're drafted, all those things? there's going to be big changes coming, and the owners understand this. But was this the time to show you could say no at a time when you had a chance to be for a month to have the stage to yourself? Obviously, they felt it was.
Okay. What are the new rules? Because there are rules. This is a different baseball game.
Yeah. Well, the new rules is that they're going to start a runner on second base in the 10th inning. And is that going to be – that's sacrilegious to, a lot of baseball fans. But they've used it in the minor leagues for a couple of years now, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what difference it makes.
So, also, if I'm the Nats, I mean, in the old days when Charlie Finley had Herb Washington, he was there just to run. If I'm the Nats and I've got Trey Turner and Michael A. Taylor on my roster, they're fast, right, and they know how to take a base. Can I just put them out there?
You cannot just put them out there.
Okay.
It is the previous batter. It's the batter prior to the guy who's going to hit in that inning. So it may not be one of your fast Nats.
Yeah, I don't want Zimmerman out there.
Isn't this great?
I don't want him there.
But Mike Lay is pretty good at a strikeout in the previous inning.
Yeah, but if you get Mike Lay Taylor to strike out, as he always does, Michael K. Taylor, then you can put him on second.
And this is what I've missed. I can't wait for Wander Suero to get back on the mound.
Yes.
Just to hear the podcast the next day.
It's a universal DH, and your opinion, I assume, is like everybody else's, that we're never going back to pitchers batting again, ever.
Well, that was part of the deal, too. You know, the players have wanted that for years. They turned that down. So right now we're going to have the DH only in the American League next season. Do I think cooler heads will eventually prevail and they will sit down and start trying to work something out? Well, based on what I've just seen the last 2 months, maybe not. But, yeah, it's going to be this year, and I doubt we're going to see many pitchers ever hit again. We'll see. We'll see. But it's definitely going away after the 2021 season.
So I know what you're saying about free agency. A guy like Mookie Betts may have picked just the right,
wow,
just a conspiracy against him in terms of timing. But when you said, right, that owners will lose money, the assumption is that all owners are unbearably rich. And maybe,
right,
that's true. Do you think teams will be sold? Do you think this loss is such that teams will, you know, have to be sold?
I don't know that. The sport just coming off a year when it had record-setting revenues, and that's another thing the players are upset about. Franchise values have skyrocketed. Revenues have skyrocketed, but the average salary has gone down slightly, and they feel like they should get a bigger piece of the pie. Are there teams that are going to have trouble meeting their payroll? Did the Nationals have to cut their minor leaguers or try to cut their minor leaguers from $400 a week to $300 a week? I haven't seen all their books. You know, Bill DeWitt of the Cardinals got roasted for saying baseball is not very profitable. He bought it for X hundred million dollars, and it's now worth X billion dollars. But I think one of the things the owners have always said is you shouldn't have to sell a business to declare it profitable. The sport is in a great place financially. So I think there are lines of credit and everything that teams do not have to. I don't think you're going to see teams sold or go out of business. Although there are a couple, you know, you hear about how far have they already extended their credit to teams that don't have great attendance.
Okay, so let's get to nuts and bolts. Do we know yet how many games, and do we know yet how many playoff teams? Are we certain?
Yeah, we are, sadly. I mean, I thought even Monday that there were the expanded playoffs to 16 teams would be implemented. It's not. It's going to be a 10-team playoff, same as always. It's going to be 60 games, and you're going to play only like the AL West and the NL West will play each other, the NL East, AL East. You're going to see a lot of Yankees and Mets, I would presume, in that scenario, just to limit the travel as much as possible. It's going to be a weird scene. You know, the biggest thing is, how are we going to adjust to watching games with nobody there? When you and I think about the special moments you've enjoyed in this sport, like Game 3 of 2001 World Series with George W. Bush on the mound, I mean, the crowd was the biggest part of that.
That's right.
The Mets coming back after 9/11, all of that. The crowd was what made it special. We're not going to have that. And how is that going to feel? I know it's going to take a long time to get accustomed to, like, I think – there's going to be no clubhouse access for the media. And, in fact, they're going to limit the number of media. I think in some cases the TV announcers, radio announcers may not travel with the teams, do it from a studio, just because they're going to limit the number of people as much as possible around the club, around the ballpark.
It is not thinkable. It is not reasonable to believe that people will not get this virus. Of course they will. Do they have what is the plan, or is it evolving as we speak?
Well, it's 67 pages, and it's basically the original plan was so restrictive in terms of using the training facilities, just basically in your uniform, leave the ballpark. And the players have said, could we have more testing? Could you test us every day? You know, now that gets mm-hmm. into a moral question around the country. Do we have enough testing? You know, I don't know how to answer that, but the players are going to be tested. If not daily, then every other day. And then what do you do? What do you do when a player tests positive? How do you quarantine them? How do you make sure everybody else feels safe? I mean, you're right. It's going
to
happen. The Phillies are experiencing it now. Charlie Blackmon, the star center fielder of the Rockies, has already tested positive. And that's our new world. You know, so what happened last time? One NBA player tested positive and professional sports was shut down. I just think we're going to have to learn how to deal with it and figure it out and ask players to be honest. The hardest thing is going to be telling players you have to live in a bubble. You know, for the next 3 months, you have to live in a bubble. That's tough to ask. And basically, you're saying your wife and your children have to live in a bubble too, because if they go out, it's the same as you going out. And, you know, it's a new world, but it's the world, you know, you and I, we all, as Americans, live in right now.
Get you out of here on this. You're a native Texas boy. Growing up, the most important thing, sports for people who grew up where you grew up, is college football. We going to have college football?
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? I mean, and it's hard to imagine that we're going to have 100,000 people. Texas A&M draws 105,000 people every game, and they're not going to be able to do that. I mean, they've just said, we don't know what we're going to do. Right now, we plan to have 20,000 people there. And, you know, teams are families. Teams live in close proximity. Players go out. And you're going to tell all those kids you can't go out? I mean, I don't know how it's going to work. I can't see it working. And I can't imagine a fall without it, too.
Thank you, Richie. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Tony.
Richard Justice, boys and girls, we'll take a break. Michael Wilbon will join us on the other side. We're just going to flip the show around. Is that okay, Nigel? We'll just flip the show around.
Yeah, sure, that works.
All right, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
You know his name, but not his past. Based on one of the best-selling book series of all time, Perry Mason is HBO's next must-watch crime drama starring Emmy winner Matthew Rhys, who does not like me, but his wife or girlfriend or steady, Kerry Russell, does. And co-starring Emmy winners Tatiana Maslany and John Lithgow. Set in a vibrant but struggling 1930s Los Angeles, the series delves into the origin story of American fiction's most legendary criminal defense lawyer. As a down-on-his-luck private investigator, Perry Mason follows his cases through the seedy underbelly of L.A., knowing full well that there's what's legal and then there's what's right. Follow Mason's journey as he unravels the secrets behind a disturbing case of a kidnapping gone wrong. Uncovering the truth means exposing a city full of corruption, and everybody is guilty. New episodes of Perry Mason air Sundays at 9 p.m. on HBO, and you can stream it on HBO Max. Has this aired already? Has the first one aired already?
Yes, this past Sunday.
Did you see it? Was it good?
I did, and I thought it was very good. Yeah,
oh, good.
I'm all in already.
Oh, good. I think I want to watch that, but I actually, to be fair, I haven't watched TV in a long time. I just have stopped.
I think this would be worth it. It really is. I thought it was really good.
Okay, we'll come back with Wilbon. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Susan Peake. This is called A Gecko Named Smog. Folks can check out her music on her website, studioblueguitar.com. And she wants to credit Michael Arafa, A-R-A-F-E-H, Arafa at thecoffeehouse.net for his help on A Gecko Named Smog. At the end of the show, you can hear all of Susan Peake's stuff, which is always great and better than what we do. Michael, if people like Susan Peake want to send us their music, how do they do so?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
Michael Wilbon joins us now from Arizona, where cases of the coronavirus in Arizona, in Texas, in Florida, in Nevada, and in South Carolina and California, which is now being hit twice, have spiked. Now that, I don't know what that means, because you didn't have a lot of cases in Arizona. You've been there for 3.5 months. Spiking could be 20 cases as opposed to 3 cases, but what is your sense of it?
No, I mean, there's only one sense of it to have, and it's not, you're right, Tony, there weren't many cases originally. I mean, yeah. Arizona was way down in cases in terms of March, April, when I got here in April, and even the first 20 days of May. But the last, I don't know, 8 to 10 days of May, and now you're, you know, 20 days deep into June, it's way up. People say, well, it was one of the first places to reopen. It really was. But even after reopening, the cases weren't great. This has gone on the last couple of weeks.
Right.
Where people, I told you, I think it's, I mean, there's a lot of just lack of willpower. You had some decisions that the governor made here, which really even the mayors of Arizona hated. And they sort of got together and just said, no, we're gonna shut some of this down, which has happened. And Tony, part of it is just, I don't want to say disregard, but it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, we were fine. We must still be fine. No, you're not still fine. Because you were having, you know, there might have been 400 cases in a day, and now you're getting 3,000. And so the numbers are staggering. And it's, again, not just here. You mentioned the places where it's staggering, and it's all of them. In California, which was not on that list, and people were really surprised that California's on that list now, and it didn't open up early, and barely is open now. So, you know, it's just, it's pretty remarkable.
That's the thing. I mean, if you were to ask me who were the governors that I watched over the course of time that impressed me the most, I would have said Andrew Cuomo in New York and Gavin Newsom in California, because they seem to be trying to deal with outbreaks very, very early on. New York has not had the surge that California has had. California locked it down. You know, what are we to make of this?
Don't know. What are we? Tony, how about the fact that one state that people just looking in from the outside went crazy over was Georgia.
Yes.
And Georgia opened up everything. And
tattoo parlors. Insane. Yes.
Yeah, and Georgia's not in that.
They're not.
Now.
They're not. So, when I'm about to yell and scream, I am cautioned by Georgia. Because Georgia seemed like the dumbest and the worst of all of them, and they haven't had the spike.
That's right.
I don't know. Well, one state that has is Florida. And from a sports standpoint, this is extraordinarily important, because at least 3 sports intended to open up and play exclusively in Florida, the MLS, the WNBA, and the NBA. What are your thoughts, if you talk to anybody, is there second thoughts about Florida now?
The second thoughts, just period, Tony. There have to be second thoughts. People may not admit that right now, but every meeting, every conference, you know, has to have massive second guessing of one's situation. I don't know what's going to happen. My dear friend, Dr. Jason Daniels, who's from Philly, is an emergency medicine here. And here's a guy who, you can think this boils down to people and how they feel about sports. It doesn't. I mean, Jason is a guy who is a season ticket holder at, like, multiple things. I mean, this guy, he does fine in his life financially. He can go and see whatever he wants. And he does. He loves it. He texted me last night and just said, I don't know. I don't know about any of this stuff, if it's going to be possible. And he's also one of those guys, Tony, he takes the temperature early on and he gets it right, you know the record Jason Daniels has, because you know I've called him in front of you and said,
"That's right.
What's going to happen here?" And sometimes you and I go, "Oh my God, he's saying this," and he just gets it. He gets it because he's not reading tea leaves. He knows, he understands science and medicine. And he just texted me last night and said, "I don't know. I don't know that I see any of this playing out." And I just said, "Oh my God, if you don't see it." And again, he's a guy who wants sports, loves sports. But he is looking at the science and having serious doubts about whether or not these things can be done, Tony. And I just, I think that people may not be saying, commissioners may not be saying that yet. Football acts like this is automatic. And the people who cover football, the people who talk, you, every day they just start with, "Yeah, what are the Jets going to do about this trade about Adams?" What? Like, we're not there. We're not there. We are somewhere where we better be asking if there's going to be a start to a season, not just like automatically. And so I'm not saying I'm pessimistic. I just think we're not, this is not like, we're not Korea. I know there's baseball in Korea. I know there's soccer, the Bundesliga. We didn't handle this as a country, as a culture. We didn't handle the coronavirus in the same way that other places did early on. And I'm not going to presume that just because sports is back to some great degree in those places that it's going to be back automatically here.
I think that things are going to start. I do think baseball, we just had Richie Justice on. I think baseball will start. I think the NBA will start. I'm not sure it'll finish. But that's my concern. I'm just not sure it'll finish.
Starting is not, starting, so what? Starting, I'm not certain it'll start. Baseball, I mean, Tony, what is baseball start date? July what?
Probably the end of, when is it? I would have thought towards the end of July.
July 24th.
Somewhere in the last week of July,
24th.
I would think.
Okay, guess what?
23rd, 24th.
Yeah. There's a month to go. We don't know.
No.
And there's no bubble.
No.
There's no bubble for baseball.
No, the NBA is the best chance, but that doesn't mean that they will protect all the athletes. It doesn't.
Tony, how is college football?
I don't know. I don't know.
Jump off when you have some of the few programs that have started.
They got 20 cases.
Reported to 20.
Clemson. Clemson has 22, right?
By the way, you're going to function on a college campus. Kids are going to stay away from each other? Really? Because they're doing such a fine job of that now in Florida and Arizona? I mean...
So let me get to a couple of things. Just and there are stories in the paper today that Megan Rapinoe, among others in the women's professional soccer league, she's just not going to play, and a lot of them are not going to play, and so maybe that won't go off. I don't really know how that works. Today is the deadline for the NBA players, if they want to opt out, to opt out. Two relatively well-known people, Trevor Ariza, who's been in the league a long time, opted out yesterday, and Davis Bertans with the Wizards. Now, these are two bad teams, the Blazers and the Wizards. Bad teams, not expected to qualify for the playoffs. They're just sort of in the run-up to it. And Bertans, they both said, "I'm out. I'm done." What are your thoughts about them? How many more people do you think will do that?
Avery Bradley did it. He's on the team that could win a championship.
I didn't know he had done it. Okay.
Done. Right. No, it's not just bad thing. No, we don't know. And it doesn't even, Tony, it doesn't even, everybody can say it, they're opting in today if they want. That doesn't mean, and by the way, there are teams that are close to reporting. Toronto may already be there. Toronto may already be in Florida. If they're not, they're like there today or tomorrow. So just because teams opt in doesn't mean it's going to happen, or players opt in. We don't know.
But do you have any particular feelings about players who have declared, I'm not going to do this?
No, how can I have any? I mean, no. No, Bert Sands is a guy who's had two ACL injuries. He's coming back. They're going to restart under conditions that may not be favorable physically for every single person.
And he's an unrestricted free agent. So
he's an unrestricted free agent, by the way. I think in Avery Bradley's case, he's also got a child who – a young child, six years old maybe, who has respiratory issues, and he's saying, I'm not going to just leave. For the Lakers could be there for almost 3 months.
That's right. That's right.
You know, the scheduled game 7 of the NBA Finals would be, I believe, October 12th. And so I don't have a certain opinion about anybody. There's just too much unknown. There's too much they don't know, we don't know. Who are their experts? Who are their, like, don't they need to know, isn't there a declaration of who's helping shape policy for each league? And what do they think? I don't know. I think we're going to have to, these discussions are going to have to be really serious that we have among the people who discuss whether or not these sports should resume. Everybody just says, yeah, we want sports. Yeah, we want it back. Okay, we want it back. Tony, suppose someone gets seriously ill. Suppose a star player becomes seriously ill. Then what?
Well, I mean,
there's a liability. I had a former coach say to me, I'm not signing any of this stuff. I wouldn't sign any of this. And this is not a person. This person, this guy I'm talking about, you know, I mean, he's dealing with a full deck totally. And he said, really, I'm going to sign one of these waivers or multiples of these waivers? So all of that, they can make the deadline tomorrow if they want. There's still so much that has to be determined that these leagues cannot know. Suppose the spikes continue. Suppose they get worse. Florida has had 4,000 cases a day recently, new cases. Arizona's had 3,000 plus. Well, suppose that number gets to 5,000 or 6,000. And California. So, I don't know what we're looking at. I just think that people are walking around talking about football like roster size. It's like, hey, pay attention. Pay attention to what's going on in this country, please.
So my sense is you were talking before whether you felt optimistic or pessimistic. I think that the third option is realistic. We have proven as a country that we did not have the stomach for shutting down the virus, that people, you know, just said, okay, you know, it won't happen to me, yeah, and so on and so forth. There's no, Mike Pence talks about there won't be a second wave. Doesn't have to be a second wave if you never stop the first wave. It just doesn't have to be. I mean, Djokovic just got this. Djokovic, a guy who put on an exhibition and hugged everybody. And, you know, it's around the world. It's around the world. So realistically, to me, again, you can start things, but if you can't have that stop date that says, and our last possible date to complete the finals is X. That's the thing you can't have. Because you're going to have to start, stop, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess. And you know, the notion that it doesn't exist, I can't deal with the politics of it. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that garbage. It's just garbage. And open your eyes. What are you saying? You know, it's like that movie with Bobby Morse, something on the married man, and a guy is like cheating on his wife. It's a comedy. His wife, and she catches him, and he's folding up his suitcase with the bed. The fold-out bed, and saying, no, there's nothing going on. And he's looking right at her. She's looking at the other woman leave the apartment. And she's looking at him, you know, put the clothes in a suitcase. And he says, no, what are you talking about? It's not happening. And he steadily, you know, removes the evidence of whatever this is. And, you know, I think Bobby Morris.
Yes, Robert Morris, A Guide to the Married Man.
A Guide to the Married Man.
Yeah, but that's 50 years ago. We're the only people that remember that movie.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Yeah, it's going away. Okay? Yeah, sure it is. Because you have to, that's the only way you're going to be reelected is to make people, and people are believing it. In some cases, Tony, people are believing. It's law here now in Maricopa County. Maricopa County is what people know of Arizona. That's greater Phoenix.
Right around Phoenix, yeah.
Tempe, that's all of that. And so the state finally said, the governor, Ducey, finally said, okay, we're making masks mandatory because it wasn't here. That happened like Saturday. And people are still walking around without them. And part of it is, I'm sorry, do you see the headline on this newspaper, the Arizona Republic? Well, first of all, people don't, Tony, they don't even consume news and information that's not on Instagram. They don't. They're not reading the New York Times or the Washington Post. They're not even reading the local newspaper here in Arizona. They're not dealing in reality. And so when you have that and you have this spike, why is it this the second wave already? Why wouldn't we call this the second wave?
It doesn't really matter which wave it is.
These numbers.
It's just like we have more cases of the virus and more deaths from the virus than any country on earth. Yeah. We do. We're the ones that should have been best prepared for this. And we do. All right. I will join you on TV tomorrow, not today. I'm taking another recovery day.
Glad to have you back.
All right. Talk to you soon. Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll come back with emails and jingles. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the bespoke post ad. If your mailbox is anything like mine, 90% of the time it's a fairly depressing place with political flyers, utility bills, unholy amounts of coupons. But once a month, I do have a reason to be stoked, and that's because of my box of awesome from Bespoke Post. Michael, talk about all the stuff that you get in these things.
Well, I could talk about what we've received, but also what we've gifted. Okay. Nigel is the owner of one whittling knife, which I think is the nicest thing that we've received from Bespoke Post. I'm looking at what they have featured right now.
What do they have?
Well, I thought Nigel might want to interject with something.
Whittling
experience.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm actually working on a nice project right now with my whittling kit. Carving a head of Lonnie Donegan, Mr.
Tremendous.
Tom, I'm sure you would like that.
Tremendous. Does your chewing gum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight? Yes. Bespoke Post sends guys only the best stuff every month, and no matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From styling grooming goods to barware to cooking tools to outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has carefully built collections for every part of your life. Got anything?
Yeah, there's actually open fire cowhide gloves. Now, these look like you can do some serious damage.
Wow.
Yeah. I hit a lot of open flames.
So you can do that. Like if you're barbecuing, you can wear these.
Yeah, and I'm smiling because this is, again, with Bespoke Post, it's stuff you wouldn't necessarily think you want.
No.
But now I can't imagine my life without these gloves.
To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up. You can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside. To get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and you enter the code Tony at checkout. Just enter the code, people. Use the code. That's boxofawesome.com, code Tony, for 20% off your first box.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag, got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag, gonna read some for all you folks.
Thank you, Gary. That'll just about do it for us today. But before we get to the mailbag, let me just remind you that we were born before the wind, also younger than the sun, ere the bonny boat was won as we sailed into the mystic. I was depressed last night because we've turned the corner on light and dark. The light is now decreasing. After the summer solstice, it decreases. And last night at about 5 minutes to 9, when the gloom was upon me, I turned to the Alexa box and I said, could you play Into the Mystic by Van Morrison for me? And could you turn it louder? And I just sat in
Alexa,
the kitchen.
Pour a glass of scotch.
Yeah, I just sat in the kitchen because I was able to drink for the first time in 2 days after this operation. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon, Richard Justice of MLB.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Bespoke Post, Brooklinen, and the new HBO show, Perry Mason. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Again, happy birthday to the baby boy, Bootsy.
Bootsy 3 code is still available, Johnny O.
Oh, you should use that. He's the best-dressed kid in America.
Oh, he's going to be rocking.
All he has is Johnny O. He's really good. From Zach Drescher. Go ahead. Bethesda Bagel. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. They're open. They've got several locations. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the store near you. They're open from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. We love them. You will as well.
From Zach Drescher in Kensington, Maryland. I write to you as a longtime Little and a former Cliffy. I'm sure you don't remember, but I interned at Atlantic Video, the studio where you used to tape PTI in the days before high definition. What halcyon days those were. I didn't get a paycheck that summer, not even a lousy transportation stipend, but the memories are priceless. I recall my first time in the studio. I found a nice place in the corner to sit and watch the show, not realizing the magnitude of my faux pas until you yelled from the desk, "Hey, Reali, you better get down here. There's some kid sitting in your chair." Anyway, I wanted to tell you that I agree with your thoughts on Chessie and the rabbits. In the 8 weeks that I've owned my dog, I've seen her chase several rabbits, not out of malice, but a genuine desire to be friends. It's very similar to the way she wants to play with every man, woman, child, dog, cat, squirrel, bird, acorn, wood chip, and dried clump of grass we meet on our walks. If you and Chessie ever find yourself in the neighborhood, I'm sure she'd love to play with you as well. Michael yelled at me about Chessie today. Chessie, the rabbits in our neighborhood are so fat. There's so many of them, and they're so fat. I wish somebody would write me and tell me who the natural enemies are that have disappeared during the pandemic. Dan, in Malvern, Pennsylvania, first time, long time, and while I've been a listener to the show for the better part of a decade, the 20-teens, do we have a name picked out yet? My desire to write to you is fueled by your description of your little habit of adding up the four digits at the end of the DC license plates. For years now, I've been playing the 24 game with the end of Pennsylvania license plates, which similarly feature four digits after a few letters. For those that don't know, the challenge is to use basic mathematical functions to turn four digits into the number 24. I'm a crazy numbers guy and a professional actuary, so since you described your horrible habit, I, of course, now cannot stop adding up the two-by-two sums while driving around, and I came up with a new challenge for myself. See if I can spot two identical sums at the same time. Would love to see an 0793 and a 5149 at the same time, but I won't be picky. My probability skills aren't as sharp as I used to be, but I believe I've got about a 1 in 150 shot of this happening with any given pair of cars. Would love it if you could double-check my figures sometimes, though. I'd be remiss if I didn't pass along a hello to Chessie from my dog-loving girlfriend. Thanks for all that you do. I will shut up and listen. From Alex Lau in New York City. While the Golf Magazine article was lovely, in the words of Brent Musburger, Michael looks like big guy, big guy, big guy, big guy, big guy compared to you. I do have one quibble. They mention your age, 71, and Michael's age, 33. Well, Michael's 34 now, but not Cindy Boren's age, 67. I imagine this was an unintentional omission that will be addressed in the next month's edition of the magazine. Just wanted to make you aware of it. Dear Mr. Tony, just a quick note from a longtime listener to let you know two things. Your stories about your beloved Chessie chasing and killing rabbits in your backyard always brings back a wonderful yet gruesomely bloody memory of my late dog, Evie Marie. Evie Marie was a very active golden retriever who once slayed an entire family of rabbits, approximately two adults and four baby bunnies in a single afternoon, and smiled the entire time as she plopped the dead and blood-soaked carcasses at the foot of my backyard lounge chair. Much like you with Chessie, I was beaming with pride for days at her successful hunting expedition. Way to go, Chessie. Two, if you were not already aware, perhaps you could briefly mention the retirement of Roger Neal, a longtime broadcaster in the Binghamton area. Roger recently hung up the microphone after 42 years of working at a variety of different jobs on air and behind the scenes at WNBF, including what he was originally hired to do, broadcast Broom Dusters hockey games. His career highlights include calling the play-by-play action for all but one men's basketball game since 1998. I was on with Roger Neal four or five times. That means he broadcast all 81 games the Bearcats played at the D2 level and 572 of the school's 573 games at the D1 level. What an incredible work ethic. Go Bearcats. That's from Dan in Buffalo, New York. And we can't end without Mike from Burke, Virginia. I share your view of lobster. A couple of times a year are plenty. Some years back, the lovely bride and I attended a wedding in Kennebunkport, Maine, while Bush 1 was president. We arrived a few days early. We had lobster for dinner. The next day, more friends arrived, and we all went out for lobster. At the rehearsal dinner, lobster. By the time the wedding reception rolled around, we would have settled for Taco Bell or KFC, but here came more damned lobsters. The wedding was a Hindenburg situation for other reasons, but the lobster stands out. I love Mike from Burke, Virginia. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Who's your favorite pitcher?
Max Scherzer.
What does Max Scherzer do?
Phoenix.
Who's your favorite batter?
Soto.
Happy birthday, big guy.
I love sleeping in the dog bed, the Casper mattress dog bed. There's no room in the dog bed for anyone else but me. My grandpa's dog is named Chessie. When he gets a rabbit, it's messy. And he tries to beat me to the dog bed when it's time to go to sleep. I'm gonna brush my teeth. I'm gonna have sweet dreams. And when he wants his bed, well, I'll send him to mine instead. I love sleeping in the dog bed, the Casper mattress dog bed. There's no room in the dog bed for anyone else but me. You know I sleep much better, though it's a little bit wetter. Sleeping in the dog bed, no more Chessie in the dog bed. The dog can sleep in my bed, and I'll be happy, you see, 'cause it's the dog bed forever for me.
Because he